This one is better. Is it working? It's not working.
Hello.
Good evening, Dharma friends. No one is going to wish me. Good evening, Dharma friends. Birds of a feather flock together. When like-minded people, when they get together, it's always a happy gathering. Buddhism is a message of happiness. I think many of you have heard, the legend says, thousands of years back, in northern India, there was a prince. He was having wealth, power, popularity, and whatever he wished for, all his wishes are fulfilled. But he felt something is missing in his life. And he wanted to find out what was missing. And he understood that he was searching for something, like you and me. And that's nothing but happiness. From the day when we are born until up to the day we die, we are always looking for, we are looking for peace, happiness. We get it for a moment, then we lost it. Well, he renounced his kingship, dedicated himself to do the experiments through his life. And finally, after 6 years long experiments, he found out the way how to be perfectly happy and perfectly peaceful. Then he came back to the society and he spent throughout his life, 45 years, to dedicate himself to teach the humankind how to be happy and the way to perfect happiness. So Buddhism is nothing but it's happiness. Buddhism talks about nothing from the right beginning to the end, it talks about the happiness. Happy are those people who understand this Dhamma. And noble are those people who practice this Dhamma. Wise are those people who realize this Dhamma. And they are ever peaceful here in this life and lives to come. So Buddhism is a message of happiness, and our module here is also labeled as happiness. Sutta Vibhanga course. And it has got two modules. Module 1 and module 2. But both modules are dealing with happiness because there is Buddhism. Buddhism talks about happiness in three successive stages, and human beings are able and capable of achieving these happiness if we were to follow the noble teachings of the Buddha. So the first level of happiness that Buddha talks about is known as happiness in this life itself. And here we have got a lot of discourses given by the Buddha, and for social integrity, political stability, and to achieve economic prosperity, to lead a happy, peaceful, married life, how to bring up your children, so on and so forth. These teachings are bringing happiness in this life itself. Ditta Dhamma Sukahita, the happiness in this life. Buddha also talks about happiness beyond the death, Samparayana Sukahita. And this is not the first life we are living, and this is also not the last life we are living. Beyond the death, life is possible. So Buddha talks about how to be happy after the death. And here Buddha talks about how to avoid producing dark energy, but how to produce bright, wholesome karmic energy. How to work in a way that we will be born in pleasurable, favorable realms in time to come and enjoy bliss and happiness. And this second category of happiness is known as Samparayana Sukahita, happiness beyond the death. Then Buddha also talks about, as long as greed, hatred, delusion and the defilements rooted in human mind, then perfect happiness is impossible. We become happy only for a moment, then become unhappy again. Because root cause of all the miseries and unhappiness are the defilements in mind. So Buddha talks about the perfect happiness, bliss and the peace can be achieved by eradicating all the cause roots of unhappiness, the defilements. And that happiness is known as Paramattha Sukahita, ultimate happiness. To achieve that happiness, he set up the system of Noble Eightfold Path, which leads to perfect happiness. So Buddhism, from the right beginning to the end, it talks about happiness. How to be happy in this life, here and now. How to be happy after the next, in our future lives. And how to be perfectly peaceful and happyful by eradicating all the defilements. So Buddhism is a message of happiness. Sutta Vibhanga course that we are going to start here today. And if you analyze the name itself, Sutta, the discourses, Vibhanga here means classification. So these discourses are specifically selected and they were arranged and categorized in a way to lead these three types of happiness step by step, step by step. So today onward, each and every lesson will make you have deep understanding of the Buddha's teaching and how to be happy. And it is necessary for you to read the discourses before you come to the lessons, to have deep and profound understanding, and you will be given the chance to ask the questions and clarify your doubts. You all have signed up for this, and you are ready to spend your time, and then to get the maximum benefit of it, you need to read the discourse before you come. I believe each and every one of you have been given the course notes for this course, and this course, this module will have 10 lessons, and each and every lesson will have a Q&A session, and if need, we can have one day for totally Q&A session at the end of the course. To get the maximum benefit from the Buddha's teaching, again, there are three things you all have to dedicate. First stage, pariyatti, theoretical understanding of the teachings. Your theoretical understanding is possible by reading the books, by listening to the talks. And here you are expected to have some theoretical understanding of these courses that we are going to talk about. Then second stage, patipatti. Whatever we learn, we have to put in into practice. Knowledge without practice doesn't lead anywhere. Why do we need the knowledge? It is to practice. And pariyatti, why do we need knowledge and practice? To realize, to experience ourselves. So when these three things come together, bring together to fulfillment, and we will realize the noble teachings of the Buddha. So with this note, I'll proceed with the teachings, our first lesson, and at the end of the first lesson, we'll have a Q&A session. Well, today our lesson is known as present welfare and future welfare. Here, Buddha talks about happiness. When he talks about happiness, he says, just like a bird needs two wings to fly properly, we need to cultivate two things to be happy, contented human beings. These are the material world and the spiritual world. And also when Buddha defined the happiness, he does not define the happiness only relevant to this life, but also future life as well. Because if a human being can live happy, contented life here and now, then definitely that human being will be happy after the death as well. So here when Buddha talks about happiness, he talks about both material and spiritual achievements and the happiness in this life and lives to come. And the discourse that we are going to talk about today is talking about these both types of happiness. Well, some people think and misinterpret. Buddhism is a world renounced in religion. It does not encourage material achievements and economic success. Buddhism is only for the monks and nuns. This is what some people believe. Because of lack of understanding of the Buddhism. And they go to the extent to misinterpret and create the misconceptions among the human beings. Especially beginning of the spreading of the Buddhism in the Western world, they have got these kind of concepts. Well, I do not know how many of you read the discourse today. Did you manage to read the discourse? How many of you? Well, some of you managed to read the discourse. If you have read the discourse, you will see this is in fact is not the truth. And what happened when Buddha visited one of the township called Kakkarapatta, and a businessman called Digajanu approached the Buddha and he said, "Venerable sir, we are lay people. We enjoy sense pleasure and live in family life. I have kids, wife, and I use gold and silver and perfumes. I enjoy my life as a layperson. Can you teach something which leads happiness in this life and happiness in lives to come?" And that is the question he asked. And Buddha never said, no, this is only for the monks and nuns. But he taught him how to be happy here and now, as well as lives to come. And these are the exact words he asked. "Venerable sir, we are lay people who enjoy sensual pleasures, dwelling at home in a bed crowded with children, enjoying fine sandalwood, wearing garlands, scents and onions, accepting gold and silver. Let the Blessed One teach the Dharma to us in a way that will lead to our welfare and happiness, both in the present life and the future life as well." What did the Buddha say? Buddha said, well, if a family man, if somebody wants to be happy here and now, first of all, you need to have material success, the economic prosperity. And he said, there are four things that lead to economic prosperity and happiness in this life. What are these four? These are the persistent effort, which is Uttana Sampada, protection, Araka Sampada, good friendship, Kalyana Mitata, balance living, Samajivikata. Buddha says these four things lead to economic prosperity and happiness in this life. And let's try to understand what are these four things. What is persistent effort? What does it mean here? Buddhism recognizes that we need to work hard diligently. When Buddha talks about achieving the wealth, he says, like bees, work diligently and collect honeys. And the bees, they go from flower to flower and collect pollen without harming the petals or colors or the fragrance of the flowers. Exactly in the same manner, wise human beings will earn in a righteous way without harming, without bringing suffering to the society in a peaceful way. So exactly the same manner, we had to work diligently. And he says, whatever may be the means by which a family man earn his living, whether by farming, trade, cattle raising, archery or civil service, or by some other craft, he's skillful and diligent, investigate the appropriate means, and is able to act and arrange everything properly. So here, these words which are highlighted are very important. So whoever wants to be economically prosperous, successful, he has to be skillful, work diligently, and also have to investigate, and should be able to arrange everything properly. Here, samma vayama, right effort. One of the factors of Noble Eightfold Path is right effort. Of course, over there we are talking about achieving spiritual wealth. But either spiritual wealth or material wealth, to achieve this, we need to have consistent effort and diligence. Among the Buddhist practice, when it comes to the right effort or diligent practice, and that is considered one of the most important and essential. That is why even among the bodhisattva qualities that all the bodhisattvas should cultivate, virya, or diligent practice, is one of them. One of Sanskrit scholars says, Udyoginam purusha singha mupayati lakshmi daivena deya mitika purusha avadanti daivang nihatte kuru paurusha matma shaktya Yatne krute yadina siddhyati korta dosha. This is ancient Sanskrit verse. And this scholar is trying to say, foolish human beings, those who are lazy, and they think everything happens because of the luck. Daivena deya mitika purushavadanti. They think things happen in our life because of good luck and bad luck. Because of our destiny, because of our fate, or this and that. He says, Daivan nihatte kuru paurushamatma shakti. Forget about this fate and luck and try your best. Yatne krite yadine siddhyati kore dosha. Having tried your best, if you cannot achieve it, then you can give up and there's nothing wrong of it. But without trying your best, and if you think it is my fate or karma or this is my luck, or good luck or bad luck, then in fact, according to this scholar, that is very foolish. And it is according to Buddhism as well. Another place, he says, Nahi suptasya singhasya pravisanti muke muga uddi menehi siddhyanti prarthyanti na mano ratai. The things come into existence, so things happened because of diligent effort. Just because we wish for something to happen, it will not happen unless we work hard for it. And he gives an example and says, the deers will not come and jump to the mouth of the lion who is sleeping with so much laziness. So he says, being human beings, we had to work hard diligently to achieve the wealth. And Buddha's the point out in the discourse on Parabhasutta, the discourse on downfall, he says, Nidda sili sabha sili anuttata cha yonaro alaso kodha panyano tam parabhavato mukha. Nidda sili, if a human being is fond of sleep, sabhasili. If someone wants to talk and talk and talk without ending like me here, and anuttatachayonaro, if a human being is anuttatacha, not diligent, not energetic, also very lazy, kodapanyano, easily get angry, such kind of human beings will go downward, tampara bhavato mukha, both spiritually and naturally here. And some people believe and say, well, he is born to be rich because of his good karma. I'm born to be poor because of my bad karma. So I have to accept it. There's nothing I can do. This is a very pessimistic way of looking at the karma. And this is not what Buddha teaches. There's no such kind of karmic theory Buddha promotes. But some human beings think everything happens because of karma. Buddha never says that everything happens because of karma. And it is true that someone can be born to be rich or poor because of past karmic energy, but does not mean that is there fixed and we cannot change it. Karma can be changed. And in clear terms, Buddha says, Appe kacchani papa kammani payada sampati patibalani. The asara in karma that we can overcome by working diligently, practicing diligently, using our human effort. So Buddhism always emphasizes the human effort. So that is where Buddha talks about the human being, those who are seeking for economic prosperity, and they should have, first of all, the persistent effort, number one. And Buddha says, in fact, in one of the discourses you come across this, and I just caught it out just to let you know, in fact, Buddha goes to the extent to give many discourses to billionaires, to the rich people, especially to the billionaire Anathapindika, and we come across a lot of advice that he gives how to achieve economic wealth. In one of the discourses we come across, and he says, a businessman, they should know the quality of the goods, and they also should know the price, and they should know the profit that they can make by selling them, and they should be skillful in buying and selling, and also he emphasized, had to be honest and trustworthy. And here he is trying to say that we had to earn in a righteous way and meaningful way. And he says, if we behave in that way, so that the highly rich person would deposit their money on us. And another place, he says, in Anguttara Nikaya, Boga bhikkhave itta kanta manapa dullabha lokasmin. He says to the monks, wealth is desirable and pleasing and charming, but hard to achieve. Achieving the wealth is all the way encouraged by the Buddha, but it has to be done in a righteous way. Well, second necessary conditions to get economic booming or prosperity from the Buddhist point of view. What is it known? It is known as the accomplishment of protection. Here simply it means it's very difficult to earn, but it will be very easy to lose. And there will be many ways that your hard-earned wealth can dwindle away. So here Buddha says we have to be very careful. Not only we should be skillful in earning, but we have to be skillful in spending and protecting our wealth. And we should be very careful. He says, a family man sets up protection against and guard over the wealth acquired by energetic striving, measured by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth, righteously gained. Thinking, how can I prevent kings and bandits from taking this away? Fire from burning it, flood from sweeping it off, and unloved hairs from taking it. Well, and today also the society is full of these kind of threats for your money, and it's not safe at all. And you think keeping money in the bank is safe? But nowadays, the technology is so developed, And without your knowledge, somebody can take away your money through a credit card. There are many ways that your money will be lost. So here you have to be skillful and very careful with our money. And not only we should earn, but also we have to be careful to protect it and not to waste it unnecessarily. Sometimes when we do not have right wisdom, then we will destroy our money unnecessarily. And there are occasions billionaires become puppets, become poor people because of behaving a very foolish way. Well, the third factor the Buddha talks about when we work towards achieving our wealth is the good friendship. Good friendship is always encouraged by the Buddha and is one of the factors that someone needs, those who are looking for economic prosperity. And he says, in whatever village or town a family man dwells, he associates with householders or their sons, whether they're young or old, who are of nature, the virtue, accomplished in faith, moral discipline, generosity, and wisdom. He converses with them and engages in discussions with them. He emulates them. Why good friendship is very important? Because Buddhism recognizes our friends. They are conducive for our material and spiritual success. Depend on the friendship that we are having and friends that we associate. And someone can become prosperous. Or someone can become wicked, even evil, immoral. And the friendship directly influence our both material and spiritual success. So Buddha always encouraged good friendship. And when Buddha encouraged good friendship, he says, look for those people who have got faith. Here, faith means the faith in good and bad, the moral efficacies, moral actions. And who has got moral discipline, and who are generous, open-minded, and has got wisdom. And if you were to associate these kind of people, and they are the ones who encourage you to earn in a righteous way, they will give you more opportunities, business opportunities, and they will encourage you to achieve both material and spiritual wealth. When we talk about the friendship, Buddha talks about there are some friends who are worthy to be associated, some friends who are not worthy to be associated. And he said there are four types of friends that we should be very, very careful when we associate. And these are the friends known as Anyadattuhara, Vachiparama, Anupibani, and Apayasahara. Let's understand who are these friends. A friend who is known as Anyadattuhara is called thief-like friend. Buddha says this friend look like a good friend, a genuine one, but we had to be very careful. It's difficult to understand this friend. Why is he given this Anyadattuhara, thief-like friends? Because this friend will associate you only for his or her own benefit. He pretend like a good friend, but always come and take things away from you. When it is said take things away from you, it may be material things, or it may be immaterial things. It may be your time, or it may be your skills, or whatever. And these friends, they always associate you with the intention of getting some benefit from you. Or some other words, they associate you for their own benefit. Not for the benefit of yours, but they pretend like good friends. And there is another friend called Vachiparama. Also look like a good friend. He says he is Vachiparama. Do only lip service. And this friend is the one who never say no to you. And whatever you ask, he will say yes. And he will promise thousands of things, but he will never fulfill his promise. He always use the words. He's very, very clever in talk. And he will talk in a way that you become happy and in a way that you will trust him. But he will do the service only through this speech, like NATO. Right? NATO also the same, right? Okay, well. The third type of rain is known as Anupibani. What is Anupibani here means? Sweet talker. And nature of this rain again has to be understood. He will never utter a single word to make you unhappy. He is very clever to observe your character, observe your interests, and he will always change with your interest and always make sure that you will be happy. And he always talk such a nice way, sweet way. He always talk nice, soothing words. But behind you, he may behave in a totally different way. And this friend is also had to be very careful. And this friend will never make you disappoint. For an example, if you say, if you suggested him to go and do something evil, wicked, immoral, he will be said, yes, that's fine to do it. And he will never bother to give you any good advice because of afraid of losing the friendship. He always speaks such a nice way that you will always find that he is a good friend, but difficult to understand. The third friend, Buddha says, Apaya Sahaya. Here, Apaya here means hell. Sahaya means accompany, the one who drag you to the hell. Apaya Sahaya. And these are the friends who encourage you to do evil, wicked, immoral, unwholesome actions. And they are the ones who drag you towards the down world, the gloomy, miserable world. They are the ones who make you addicted to drugs. They are the ones who make you addicted to gambling. They are the ones who encourage you to go and mingle with gangsters, who engage in those terrorist activities. These are the Apaya Sahaya friends. But difficult to understand, because when we are in friendship, we believe these four are good, virtuous friends because of their bonding with you. And it will be so difficult for you to understand them unless you are very wise, intelligent. You always think these friends are good friends. Well, Buddha said, be careful with these four friends, but there are another four types of friends you have to be associated because they bring you so much happiness, joy, and benefit in your life. Who are these good friends and worthy to be associated? These are the friends, Buddha says, Upakaraka, Samana Sukha Dukkha, Anukampaka, and Attakkai. These are the four friends. What is Upakaraka Mitta? It's a supportive friend. The nature of this friend is no matter whatever happens in your life, he always come and support you. He never expects anything in return. And this friend is very difficult to find. And not many people have got this kind of friends. And this friend is very selfless. And he always come and always help you. When you are in need of help, this friend will be always there for you. And no matter whatever happens in your life. And Upakaraka Mitta, they are difficult to be found. And if you find such a one, Buddha says, associate this person throughout your life. Because these are worthy ones, are difficult to be found. Second friend, Buddha says, he is like your own shadow. Samana Sukha Dukkha friend. He said, no matter whatever you happen to you, whether you rich or poor, sick or healthy, young or old, these are the friends who go along with you throughout the life journey, like your own shadow. And they will never discriminate you, and no matter whatever happens, they will always love you, care you, and stay with you in your miseries, in your happiness. This friend will be there for you. You always can count this friend. And Buddha says, difficult to find and rare to find these friends. And if you have got one, then associate them throughout your life. You should treasure them. Third friend, Buddha says, Anukampaka Mitta. And this is a compassionate friend. His heart is full of compassion. He always have compassion towards you. No matter whatever you do, whether you make him unhappy or criticize him or did something wrong towards him, still he is forgiving and let go the grudges. He never keep any grudges towards you. He always compassionate, like your own mother, like your own father, yeah, like your own elder brother or sister. always look after you with so much compassion. And He has put so much love towards you, so He can always let go all the grudges. For He always can forgive you. And rare to find, and if you get one, then you associate throughout your life. Then the Buddha says the last one, which is known as Attakkai. Many of us, we do not like this friend. But Buddha says, this is again a wonderful friend. The nature of this friend, he is like advisor. He always come and lecture you. And many people, they don't like. Buddha says, Nidhi nanga pavattarang yam passe vajya dasina Niggaya vadi medaving tadi sampanditam bhaji Tadi sambhaja manasa seyo hotina papa. Explaining the nature of this friend, Buddha says, this friend is someone like coming and showing you a hidden treasure. He always come and pinpoint you your mistake. Always come and tell you your wrongdoings or highlight your evil, negative, unwholesome habits and always try to recorrect you. And not only that, the nature of this friend, he always scold you, Nikaya Vadi. Always scold you and like a teacher or like father or mother and will force you to follow the good path and try his best to avoid you from evil, wicked, immoral path. But this friend has got so much compassion, loving kindness towards you, but look like very rough. And like a teacher. So I said, not many people like. But Buddha says, you should associate them. Because by associating them, you become polished. And you will become better. And we need these kind of friends. So these are the four friends from the Buddha's own point of view. We need to associate if you want to achieve both material wealth and the spiritual wealth. Because these both are needed to be happy, contented, joyful human beings. So this.
Oops, what happened? Yes, it's like it's gone. I hope you know how you go through it.
Can it be because of a hungry ghost? Because 7 months. Okay. Okay, yeah, this one. Okay. Done. I think many of you have heard this. At the end of each and every meritorious deeds, we recite this in Pali tradition. We recite Imina punya kamene mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana patya. With the grace of these merits that I have acquired, may I never meet evil and wicked immoral people. But until I attain my enlightenment, may I come across virtuous good friends. This is one of the spirituals we do, especially in Pali traditions, whenever we do the chanting, and this is our wish we make. So because noble friends are so important. So Buddha says, one day Venerable Ananda says to the Buddha, Lord, I think the holy life, spiritual life, 50% depend on the good friends. So Buddha says, Mahevang Ananda, do not say that. Not only 50%, 100%. The holy life depend on the virtuous friends. So here, it's very clear. The Buddha emphasized on associating good friends for both spiritual and material success. Now we have come to the fourth factor. And those who are seeking for economic prosperity, they need to cultivate a balanced life. Why do we need a balanced life? If you do not have a balanced life, then we cannot get economic prosperity. When you earn 1,000 per month, and if you were to spend 2,000, then of course you had to borrow another 1,000 from somebody else. So we need a balanced life. So here Buddha says, A family man knows his income and expenditure and leads a balanced life, neither extravagant nor miserly, so that his income exceeds his expenditure rather than the reverse. Just as a goldsmith or his apprentice holding up a scale knows by so much it has dipped down, by so much it has tilted up, so a family man leads a balanced life. Here, Buddha talks about we have to live within our means. We should not be extravagant or we should not be miserly. Both are extremes. When you achieve 1,000, if you spend only $10, that is utterly miserable. And when you achieve 1,000, if you were to spend 2,000, that is extravagant. Always follow the middle path. A balanced life is always encouraged and important. And Buddha, in fact, when he talks about economic achievement or prosperity, and he has got this suggestion for his followers, but you do not have to follow it exactly in the same manner. And this is just a suggestion given by the Buddha to billionaire Anathapindika, as well as some of those people, how to have a balanced life, or how should you manage your economy. Very simple methods, and 2,500 years back it worked, and even today sometimes it works for us, but we can adjust and adapt always. And according to the Buddha's advice for those people who lived in his time, he gave this suggestion: ekena bhoge bunjaya dvihi kammam payoje chatuttancha nidapaya apadasa bhavisati. He said, divide your wealth into four portions. Suppose for your monthly income, if it is 1,000, then you divide it into four portions. And he said, ekena bhoge bunjaya, use one portion, one of the fourth, for your expenditure, day-to-day expenditure. Then he said, dvihi kammam payoje, the 50%, it means two portions, you should spend or invest to earn more. Then you can achieve more wealth. And the last and the fourth portion, you should save it, keep it safely when you are in need of money, then you do not have to borrow, or when you are in danger, or when you have calamities, problems, economic difficulties, you can use that money. So simply he says, divide your monthly income into four portions and use one portion for your day-to-day expenditure and try to live within that, and use two portions, means 50%, for your business or whatever the way that you get your wealth. So if you are a businessman, you are supposed to use 50% for your business progress or for the development. Or if you are somebody who is earning through your skills, for your skill development, career development, so on and so forth, you don't have to follow it exactly in the same manner, but you can have it as a role model, and you can adjust and adapt always. The concept is important. Well, Buddha also, when he talks about economic prosperity and how to be rich, he has got the ancient time, these four type of economic investment. These are known as Thavara, Jangama, Angasama, and Anugamika. You can invest in Thavara. Here means immovable. What is immovable here? Immovable here means those properties which cannot be moved, like buying lands or houses and properties. A property is a big business here. Right? You invest in property, and this is called Thavara, investing in property. And Jangama means movable property. What are the movable properties? These are the machines, cars, bus, and so on and so forth. They can be moved from one place to another place. These machines can be used to earn more. In the time of the Buddha, the movable properties can be elephants or horses or some other type of those kind of animals or machines, whatever can be used. In which we can shift them from one place to another place. And then the third type of investment Buddha talks about is known as Angasama. Angasama here means developing your skill. Anga here means a portion of your body. It means developing your skills. Angasama, similar to part of your body, is the skills. So developing your skills, getting new knowledge, and training yourself to become a very skillful person in corporate world. This is another type of investment, going to the universities, getting a degree and having PhD, or having vocational training, spending for such kind of things. Another kind of investment according to the Buddha. And the fourth one, the beauty of the Buddha's teaching, he always, without failure, whenever he talks about the success, he includes both material and spiritual, so that you can see the last one here. The last one, he says, Angasamanidana, means you also can invest in the field which can go beyond the death. Number one, two, and three, they are, of course, investment and bring wealth in this life itself. But the fourth one, Buddha says, can go even beyond the death. Here he means, spend some wealth to do good, charity, for the well-being and happiness of the others, to happiness of humanity, and do something beneficial, wholesome, and that brings a lot of happiness here, and that produces karmic energy that can go beyond the death. So here we understand, yes, someone can be born to be rich because of the good karma. That is possible. Or in the same token, someone can be born miserable as well. But does not mean karma is fixed. We can always change it. Well, these are the four kinds of investment Buddha talks about. And in the discourse, I'm going through the discourse. You have to read the discourse. Those people who read the discourse will understand where all these are coming from. They all are from the present discourse. So you have to go home today and please read it. Okay, in the discourse, Buddha again talks about there are these four ways that our hard-earned wealth can dwindle away. And he said, wise people should be very careful and you should not get into these four traps because they will make you poor, beggars, miserable, spiritually downward, and material also bring you downwards. And these are the ones Buddha says, itti dutto, sura dutto, akka dutto chayo naro. If a human being was addicted to womanizing, then addicted to drugs and drinks, or gambling, or associate those kind of friends who addicted to those evil, wicked, immoral, unwholesome ways of lives, then he says, laddang laddang vinasati. Whatever you receive will dwindle away, come to the end or destroy. Tamparabhautamukhan, that is a cause of downfall. So being wise, intelligent human beings, Buddha says, avoid these. And if you do not avoid it, then you will be in trouble and you may not be able to get economic prosperity. Suppose if a businessman were to be addicted to these fields, then his business will go downward. And if a spiritual person were to be addicted to it, his spiritual wealth also will be going downward. In the time of the Buddha, there was a billionaire, and he married, and through this marriage, he also got a lot of money. And he was given a position in the royal court called Seti, means bankers, banker of the city of Savatthi. What happened? He came across some young friends whom he developed a great bonding, and these friends were drunkards. Eventually, this billionaire get into drinking, and together with the drinking, all the other habits came: womanizing, gambling, and all the others. So a lot of friends came to his palace every day. Every day they were having parties and this and that. So all the wealth slowly, slowly dwindled away, because hundreds and thousands of people come and they eat and drink and spend. He is very generous but very foolish. Time to come, what happened? This man became very poor. Then he doesn't have money anymore. Then he started selling his properties. And finally, he started selling his wife, the ornaments, gold and silver, which belonged to wife. And finally, he sold out his house. And there was no way, no place for him to stay. Together with his wife, he was going from house to house in that very city, begging for the food. And eventually came to the monastery of Jetavana, where Buddha was sitting. And Buddha pointed out to Venerable Ananda and said, "Ananda, look at this man, the billionaire of this very city. Because of addiction to drinking and the other habits, he became bigger today." And he pointed out the negative consequences of drinking and addiction to the drugs. Well, that's not the time for us to go ahead with that discussion. Here simply I want to tell you, that was just only one incident. There are many hundreds and thousands of incidents happens all around the world that people get into trouble and become poor, miserable, because of falling into these traps. So Buddha's advice is to avoid. Okay, as I told you, the Buddha always not only talks about material wealth, he always talks about spiritual wealth, because these two are interconnected, interdependent from the Buddhist point of view, and especially needed. So in the discourse, this young man, when he came to the Buddha, he asked, "Venerable sir, can you teach us the Dhamma to bring happiness in this life and to bring happiness in life to come?" So those teaching what we discuss here, these are the teachings which bring happiness in the present life, economic prosperity. And here Buddha says there are four things lead to future welfare and happiness. What are these four? And these four also bring spiritual happiness here and now. These are the one he says, accomplishment in faith, saddha. The discourse analyzes what is saddha. Saddha, the Pali term saddha, even though we translate it to English as faith, in fact it does not convey the real meaning of the word saddha. Saddha here means confidence or faith based on understanding. There are two types of saddha in Buddhism. One is known as amulika saddha, the other one is known as akaravati saddha. One is blind faith, the other one is faith based on understanding and analyzing. Many religions, in fact, encourage faith, but that is just the blind faith. They do not let you to investigate. They just tell you, just believe, that's it. But Buddha never says, just believe. He says, ehipasiko, come and check it yourself. You should understand. So Buddhism always encourages understanding rather than the faith. But when it is said saddha, saddha here means understanding the kind of faith, kind of confidence, kind of devotion and respect arise in our mind when we understand the Buddha's teaching. And he is such a wonderful teacher, enlightened teacher. So having understood it, in our mind arises a kind of faith, kind of devotion, kind of confidence. That is what it means by the word saddha. To make it clear, I will give an example to understand. Suppose, friends, I'll tell you that I have a gem in my hand, and believe me. How many of you are going to believe? Nobody? Are you sure? Nobody is going to believe. I have a gem in my hand. Believe me. Right? I appeal. Believe me. How many of you are going to believe? Can I have the hands up? Okay. Nobody is going to believe. But how do you know? How do you know whether I really have a gem or not? That's right. Well, in the first place, when I say, I have a gem in my hand, believe me, if you believe, still you are blind. If you do not believe, still you are blind. Why? When you believe, you just believe with blind faith in me. And when you do not believe, still you do not know whether I really have a gem or not. So this is called blind belief or blind faith. And Buddha discard it. And we do not need this kind of belief or faith. Then the Buddha's way of presenting is also same, but with a different approach. He also will come and tell you, I have a gem in my hand. And then he will open it and say, come and check it. Ehipasiko. So you will be given enough freedom to come and touch this gem, check it, and do investigations, and to make sure whether it is a genuine one or not. In that way, when you have understanding, with that understanding, you have developed kind of faith, kind of confidence, kind of devotion. And that is what we call faith. And he says, just like when a piece of gold is given to a goldsmith, he will cut it, he will touch it, he will rub it with a touchstone to make sure it's a genuine piece of gold. Then only he will decide. Exactly the same way he says, when it comes to Dhamma, you have to analyze it, scrutinize it. You have to question about it. Then only you have to accept it. This is what we call faith here, Saddha. So that is not blind faith. Faith also here, the Saddha, again, faith in the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Faith in the Buddha, not the blind faith. Having understood the Dhamma. So Dhammam pasati, so mam pasati. So mam pasati, so Dhammam pasati, says the Buddha. He says, whoever understands the Dhamma, that person understands the Buddha. Whoever understands the Buddha, he understands the Dhamma. It means Buddha is the manifestation of the Dhamma. You can see the Buddha through understanding the Dhamma, the one who preached it. So when you have faith in the Buddha, you will listen to the Dhamma. And when you have faith and listen, then you will practice. So basically here, faith means faith in the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. But it's not blind faith. Number two, why it is... Okay, before that. Why is it necessary for spiritual development? When you have the faith in the Buddha, you will follow him. You will imitate him. You will emulate him. You will listen to him. You will respect him. So once you follow his teachings, and his teaching is avoiding evil and cultivating good and purifying the mind, so you will refrain from producing evil, wicked, immoral, unwholesome, avoid unwholesome actions, and you will do wholesome, beneficial actions. And in this way, you will receive the second stage, which is known as moral discipline, sila. Here, sila, what is sila means? Sila means kaya vachanam samodhanam silam, controlling one's speech and actions. Basically, dedicating for two things. All the religions encourage it. What are these two things? Keep away from evil and cultivate good. This is the same lesson when our mother taught us when we are very small, be a good baby or be a good boy, do good, be good, don't be naughty. When a mother teaches these kind of things, she's simply trying to tell, don't follow the evil path, but follow the good path. So the base for all the religions is, again, sila, moral conduct, ethical conduct. So that is the base for the spiritual perfection, spiritual achieving the spiritual world. So number three is known as chaga, generosity. Generosity, he means giving away. And not just giving away, giving out of compassion, out of goodwill, out of friendship, having a lot of noble thoughts in the mind. And when we give, we reduce greed, we reduce attachment, we reduce our craving, we reduce our desire. When we give, we produce loving kindness, compassion, goodwill, friendship. And when we become open mind and give with compassion and goodwill, with understanding, then with selflessness, we also reduce the delusion. So in this way, friends, whenever we practice chaga or giving, we reduce greed, hatred, and delusion, and we produce opposite qualities. As long as you have greed, you cannot give away. So instead of greed, you need to have generosity. As long as you have hatred, you cannot give to anyone. And that is not the right way of giving. So you need to have compassion, goodwill, friendship. And then Buddhism always encourages giving with understanding. So when you understand the benefits of giving and how it leads to your happiness and happiness of the others, how it helps you to get spiritual development, and that itself reduces your delusion. Well, of course, number one, it is known as wisdom, developing understanding. Here, understanding the nature of the existence. Understand the nature of your body and mind. Your body and mind and everything else in this universe, nothing is absolutely independent, but everything is interdependent, interrelated. Everything has come into existence dependently. That is known as conditioned genesis. And these things are momentarily changing. Every single second, they are undergoing changes. So life should be understood as energy form. It's as a wave form, not static, but changing. So our life itself, body and mind, and outside of our body and mind, everything else is subject to change. From the smallest cells of your body until up to the biggest stars in this universe, nothing is permanent, but it should be penetrated through our wisdom. And wisdom cannot be developed without meditation. So, basically speaking, these four, faith in the triple gems and undertaking disciplinary rules and following disciplinary rules to train your speech, to train your thoughts, to train your physical actions, as well as practicing generosity to reduce greed, hatred, and delusion, and dedicating yourself to meditation. And that leads to ultimate happiness. Happiness in this life, as well as happiness in lives to come. And this is the way, again, to achieve even ultimate happiness. So it's beautiful, friends, because Buddha, in this discourse, he incorporates both material world and spiritual world. And he emphasizes, like a bird needs two wings to fly properly, we need these two equally to be developed to achieve the happy, contented, peaceful life. And in summarize, he said this in Dhammapada. He said, a person who has got these qualities, uttanavato satimato suchikammasani sammakarino, sanyatasvacha dhamma jivino appamattasya yaso bivaddati. He says, uttanamato, if a human being is energetic, work hard diligently, satimato, very mindful, and suchi kammasa, dedicate himself to righteous conduct, means through his speech and actions, he maintained purity, nisammakarino, and he is always investigating his own thoughts, actions, and speech, and he does actions having investigated. Then, sanyatasaja, his senses are well controlled, well disciplined, and dhammajivino dedicate himself to live righteously. Appamattassa, such kind of a diligent person, or one who work hard in a such a way, both materially and spiritually, to achieve material and spiritual wealth. For such a person, yaso abhivaddati, his fame and glory increase. So that is the summary of the discourse. And Buddha says that there are three kinds of people found in the world. He said, one is a blind man. And Buddha says, this one, he doesn't know how to achieve material wealth. He also doesn't know how to achieve spiritual wealth. He is born to be a human being, but he wastes this precious human life because he doesn't understand how to achieve these two types of wealth. So he wastes his time. Then Buddha says, there's another one who has got only one eye. One-eyed man. And he says, this one, he is capable and able of producing only material wealth, but he doesn't care how he is going to earn. He will do any kind of actions just to earn. He will not have any compassion towards the others. And he is able only achieving material wealth. He doesn't have any care towards the fellow brothers and sisters who are the living beings. Buddha says, this man has got only one eye, the eye of material wealth. Then the third one, Buddha says, there is another one who has got perfect eyesight, and he has got both eyes. And Buddha says, this is the one who has got both material wealth and the spiritual wealth, and the perfect one. And he said, all his followers must be those who have got both eyes, both spiritual and material wealth. Then only we become a successful human being from the Buddha's point of view. So that was the discourse, and this is it. And we have some highlights just to remind what we learned here in a very nutshell. Okay, it is a misconception to say that Buddhism does not encourage economic prosperity. Agree? So you can prove it. Not only agree, you should be able to prove it. So when your fellow brothers and sisters, sometimes when they discriminate, when they go to the extent to say this kind of things, yes, Buddhism is only for the monks and nuns, it doesn't encourage economic prosperity, this and that, you should be able to quote this discourse. Why not? Go and read it. You can present this, you see. So it is in fact because of lack of understanding human beings go to that extent. There are lot of discourses Buddha talks about economic prosperity and how to become rich. And he never glorify the poverty. In our next topic also, we are going to deal with somewhat related to economic prosperity and its philosophy, our next topic. The discourse you can read later on at home, and especially before you come to the class next week. And the second point here, to lead a happy, meaningful, and noble life, we need to achieve both the material and spiritual success. This discourse emphasizes it. And when this man asked the Buddha to give some teachings for the present welfare and future welfare, Buddha gave two separate type of teachings which leads to both welfare, the welfare of both life, as well as they are interconnected and interdependent related. And also Buddhism does not define happiness based on only material success and the present life. Agree? We are not confined only to material success. And there can be some human beings who define happiness only based on material success, as well as only confined to the sense gratification. But Buddhism goes beyond these barriers and doesn't confine happiness only to material success or to present life. But Buddhism also encourages it to take into consideration account of spiritual success and well-being of future life as well. So not only in this life, and we have to be happy in next life as well. So we have to behave in a way that we'll be happy both here and hereafter the next life. Well, we have come to the end of this session, and let's spend 1 minute of silence, and we will go back to our meditation posture. And here you are supposed to reflect what you learned here today, and then you are also supposed to reflect upon what you are what are the places in the discourse that you do not understand, and the questions that you want to ask, and the doubts you want to clarify. So to go through your memories, and we will spend another 1 or 2 minutes, so you all can sit comfortably and close your eyes and reflect what you have learned here today, and what can we do to become better human beings. And later we will open this session for Q&A. Okay, shall we open this session for Q&A? Anybody want to ask any question?
Thank you, Bhante. Let us all say together 3 sadhus. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. For those who do not know what is sadhu, is rejoice. Do you all have any questions for Bhante? It's 9:15. Okay. Dr. Yeo?
My only regret is that the Singapore cabinet is not here to listen to you.
Okay. What about brother here in front? You had a question?
Earlier on, you mentioned about 4 kinds of investments. I just want to understand a little bit more about the movable one. You mentioned about cars and vehicles. Perhaps during Buddha's time, cars are probably a form of investment at that time. But I guess in Singapore case, especially here, because we've got expensive COEs, and most of us, I think for most of us, cars are actually more like a liability. Other than if you were to own perhaps a delivery service or a taxi company, that car. So I just want to understand a little bit more about what does this mean in the current context, current society.
First of all, understand this teaching was given to those people who lived 2,500 years back. To a to the society. In fact, in the time where Buddha lived in India. And we should not take these examples and try to imitate them or emulate them or follow them exactly in the same manner, but just take them as an example or some of the areas that you can think of. And if you can find only these four areas nowadays, we cannot make economic success in the modern society. So when Buddha gave these four criteria as a kind of suggestion, we should not confine only to these four. And we have to understand that these were given as suggestion to those people who lived 2,500 years back. Today's society is different. So we have to look for different areas and other fields for the investigation. And when it comes to the teachings of the Buddha, Four Noble Truths, Dependent Origination, Three Characteristics of Nature, Condition Genesis, Karma and Rebirth. This is the essence. And this teaching, which is essence, does not change with the time. It's known as akalika. This is the truth. Truth cannot be changed with the time. Truth doesn't change with the culture or the place. So the truth is beyond the time and space. But other than this, the truth which is known as the Dhamma, in a strictly sense, the doctrine of the Buddha, are teachings that Buddha has given, many teachings for economic development, for social integrity, for harmony, the political coexistence, and for happy married life and all these things. And these teachings we can use today, but the society has changed. The concepts are very important. The philosophy behind the concepts and teachings are very important. It doesn't change, but the way we are going to implement should be changed. So we may need modification, and that is understood and it is allowed. That's what Buddha simply means when he was just about to pass away, addressing the monks, and he said, "Monks, if you all agreed upon, you all can change minor rules and regulations regarding the monastic order and not, of course, the major ones." So when he says something like that, and it's easily understood, of course, there are many things we can have to adjust and adopt accordingly. But according to these four, we still can think of, we can still use these four ways. At the same time, we can explore ourselves for better opportunities or better options. Okay, so the movable here means in the time of the Buddha, like carts or like certain type of machines which are made of wood for weaving purpose or many other for simple machines, as well as those elephants and horses and those kind of animals which are used by human beings, tame. And these are always, of course, a type of investment in the time of the Buddha. And in modern society, it can be included anything, any movable properties, cars, buses, trains, even aeroplanes, so deco machines, or whatever, even the computers which can be moved. Okay, but you do not have to confine on to that.
Second point about the way to have happiness in the present life, you also mentioned that to protect wealth from unloved haste. So the Bhante, please share with us what do you mean by unloved haste? Because in the modern world, there's a lot of disputes when a wealthy person passed away, and about the distribution of wealth. One thing would be good also if you can talk a little bit more about a skillful way of distributing wealth.
Okay, here unloved here means those who are legally does not have right to possess this wealth, but through their cunning ways and being very skillful, they can possess someone's wealth if you are negligent and if you are not skillful. Suppose you start a company with another person and you become a sleeping partner, but you invest a lot and you do not you trust on this person in 100% and let this person to carry on whatever he wants. And eventually it is possible this person will kick you out and get all the business. So here in this case, and you are foolish. And here Buddha says, have to be careful again. Or in another case, maybe you bought a property, but you trust someone, and then you transfer all the property to that person's name, or you shared your bank account with another person, so the other person can take away everything, but you trust unnecessarily. And even in the case of children nowadays, I mean, we have come across many incidents like when the properties were totally handed over to children and there were some ungrateful children who kicked out mother and father. So here Buddha is simply asking you to be very careful and intelligent and take wise actions. In the time of the Buddha, there was a billionaire and he did not have children. And in fact, he did not eat well, he did not enjoy his wealth, he lived like a beggar, but all of a sudden he died because of heart attack. Then, since there was no children, and the government possessed the wealth. So there can be some human beings even today, they earn and earn and earn, they do not eat, they do not drink, they do not enjoy, they do not wear, and they become so stingy, they don't give away, and they save, and on the day that they die, they also cannot take money with them. So somebody else will possess, so that person also unloved here in a way. Right? Whether it's the government or whether it is somebody else, so it can be analyzed in many, many ways, in different ways. And especially here, Buddha also emphasized that some people can be shrewd and cunning and skillful to take your property and get the legal ownership for your property if you do not become wise, intelligent and careful. And here he's warning.
We've got many questions from this side.
Good evening, Mandy. I just had a question. It's more about, you talk about friendships just now. I think about unworthy friends and worthy friends. So I think all of us here should try to cultivate the qualities of worthy friends, right? But I think realistically, like, it's very hard to disassociate ourselves from the unworthy friends, because I think sometimes it doesn't come to our consciousness until much later. And when that time comes, right, where do we say no? And I want to disassociate, because we don't cut off ties just like that. And I feel that I will become an unworthy friend because I'm not very compassionate if I just, you know, cut off ties like that. So I think that's something that a lot of us deal with when there are negative influences in our lives. So how do we stop them from making an impact on our lives?
When it comes to unworthy friends, so those friends that you mentioned, and we have to be careful with associating them. And Buddha encouraged associating virtuous, good, worthy friends. But when he says, be careful when you associate these kind of wicked, immoral people, and he warned for these two things. By associating wicked, immoral, unwholesome people, in time to come, you will be one of them if you are not spiritually matured enough. If you are not spiritually strong enough, you can become one of them. That is the danger. But If you are spiritually strong and matured enough, then you can associate them, and not only that, you can even change them to become better human beings. And here you need both wisdom and compassion. This, of course, all the way encouraged by the Buddha, and Buddha himself practiced it and encouraged all his disciples to practice it. So when he comes to this particular point of associating unworthy friends, he has got these two messages. If you are going to associate these friends, yes, can be wise, intelligent, in the first place, not to fall into their trap and become someone like that. Number two, have compassion and try to influence them and try to change them for better. And if you are incapable of doing either of these two, better keep away. It's good for you because you are not the person to get into the trouble. So these are the advice given by him. And we are not discriminating, or we are not putting them down, and simply understand that we had to be wise and we had to be compassionate. So when Buddha encouraged associating virtuous friends, and when he discouraged associating evil, wicked, immoral ones, and he discouraged only for spiritually immature people. But if you are spiritually strong, and then if you are able and capable, of course, we all the way. Take the Buddha's life itself. We come across thousands of people walking hundreds of miles, approach the Buddha every day to listen to his teaching, and they all became noble individuals. But Buddha all the way went out of the city and out of the road, looking for evil, wicked, immoral people like Angulimala, the serial killer, like Alaraga, the one who eat the human flesh, a human being who behaved like a demon, Alaraga. And he all the way went looking for those evil, wicked, immoral people, but he has got one condition, and these people should be wise, intelligent, enough to understand his teaching. So if he understood that some human beings, even though they are wicked, immoral, unwholesome, they have capacities, abilities to transform themselves to become human beings, the better human beings, he all the way went all the way to help them. And he encouraged the monks to do that too, as well.
Good evening, Bhante. Yeah, I have a question to ask. How do we differentiate or balance between greed and a reasonable pursuit for material wealth? Say, for example, someone who aspires to be a millionaire or multi-millionaire, how do you tell that that is a greed or that is a reasonable pursuit?
You are the best one to understand this, to know whether you are having greed or whether you are having the what is it called, the pursuit or perseverance. And you know yourself, greed here means and excessive greed, which that you are having more than enough, but you still want more and more and more, and there's no end, and there's no saturating point, and this is where the danger comes, and you become blind. Buddha says, uno loko atito tanha daso. Human beings, they always think it's not enough, and become tanha daso, become a slave to craving, and these are the greedy people. And that unuma hutvana jahanti deha, at the moment of the death, they die as unsatisfied human beings. Still, they think it's not enough. Kamehi lokamainahi atititi. There's no end for greed. So this is the danger of it. So we have to understand the difference between the greed and our perseverance to achieve material and spiritual wealth. And also we have to understand the difference between needs and wants. And if you understand the difference between our needs and our wants, then we will have a rough idea of what is greed and what is our perseverance. So what we what is it called? What is the term that you are going to use for greed and okay, reasonable, justified greed. Yeah. Huh? So, I mean, as ordinary human beings, we each and everyone, we all like to have a comfortable life, have wealth, popularity, power, so on and so forth. Buddha himself encouraged it, correct? Both material and spiritual. This is, as ordinary human beings, this is what we are trying for. But then when you have excessive greed, this is where the danger comes and you do not have a limit and you do not know your boundaries and you will go to the extent to do any kind of evil, wicked, immoral actions for the sake of satisfying that greed, and there's no end for it.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Wasn't it, you know, enriching that, you know, we can make use of Buddha's teachings more than 2,500 years ago?